Us on the Seahawks Collective presented by Hog Media. I'm really starting to like the whole post-game win shows that we get to do on Tuesday night here. So shout out to the Seahawks for allowing us to do that. I'm AB Hasselbeck, joined by three guys who I know are probably more, if not just as hyped as I am about the Seahawks Sunday night win over the Washington Commanders. Brian Nemhauser, Hawk blogger, Michael Shandugar covering the Hawks for The Athletic, and Rob Staton from the Seahawks Draft blog. We got some dubs in the chat to recap some key injuries. And what was that? The Seahawks were active on the trade deadline day. Yes. Oh, pen in hair. you'll be excited to hear about that. And also just previewing a team that we saw take down the Cowboys in Dallas in the Arizona Cardinals. So use the chat, share any questions you have for these guys, and we'll do our best to get to them all. But I do want to shout out my guys who are in Arizona. And Rob, you were also probably up late because, Mike, we were talking off camera. You had a 2:15 a.m. post-game show. Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't go to bed on Sunday or Monday morning until like 5, but I slept in. And I'm a dad of two small kids, so I don't get much sleep anyway. So, but yeah, I was on the same type of plan Rob was probably on in terms of trying to stay up and watch the game.
Rob, what was your itinerary for game day?
Well, usual thing where game kicked off at 1:20 in the morning. It was fantastic because I was kind of sat relaxed on the couch. There was no stress. You know, I tweeted out halfway through and then immediately regretted it, thinking I'm going to do this. This is my fault for tweeting to say to the team, I'd love it if you could just not allow the Commanders to come back into this. But they didn't, and it was brilliant. And then I did my stream, and the two guys that I streamed with couldn't join me because it was too late. So I was on my own. And that was at about 4:45 in the morning. So, and then I went to bed again as the rest of my household were waking up. But it was all worth it because they won. So it was fantastic.
Hey, we were talking about that on the last show about if the Seahawks could just hand you a calm win and a peaceful win. So they did it. They clearly were tuning in. Brian, how are you doing on this Tuesday night?
You know what? I'm doing pretty well. It's nice that even when you're exhausted from the travel and all the news and the content, that the Seahawks give you something to give you a little boost. And if it's not a big win, it's a big trade. So yeah, looking forward to chopping it up with you guys.
Yeah, well, we'll get to all those things. But I do want to have a quick fun question for you all, because we've seen some incredible plays from the Seahawks so far this season in all three phases. Some crazy catches on offense, defensive stops, special teams blocks and turnovers, and maybe, like you alluded to, Brian, maybe some more on offense now with the new add to the wide receiver room that we'll get there. But this is our post-Halloween show, so I have a little trick-or-treat question for each of you. So it's going to be a trick-or-treat play. So you're going to pick a play, a trick play, or a treat play, which is like a treat play to watch, a play that you're excited to watch, that you are hoping to see from the Seahawks so far that maybe you haven't seen, or something that you've already seen that you want to see more of. For me, it's a special teams fumble recoveries, thanks to the big guy, Brandon Peely. So I'm all about that. So that would be my treat. I don't know if that technically counts as a trick play, but that's what it is for me. So Rob, I'll start with you. What is your trick or treat play you are hoping to see from the Seahawks the rest of the season?
Poor. What am I hoping to see? It'd be nice to see one of the running backs like have like a big run.
A Beastquake part two.
I tell you what I'd like to see. No more trick plays. That's what I'm going for. I don't want to see any more of that stuff. I just love the way that the conventional stuff is going. So one thing I wanted to see was an Elijah Arroyo touchdown. We had that at the weekend. So I was really pleased to see that. Hopefully there's more where that came from, or maybe harder to get in the ball now because they've traded for another receiver. It's quite a difficult question to answer on the spot because I like the conventional ways that they're playing at the moment, and I'd quite like to see that carry on.
Hey, that's fair. There hasn't been some great evidence of the trick plays so far this season, so that's a fair answer. Brian, what would it be for you?
Yeah, I don't know if this qualifies as a trick play, and maybe these are going to be like the worst, most boring answers for you, AB, but I...
It's okay. I'm not a Halloween fan, truthfully, so I was like honestly hesitant to do this question, but I felt like I needed to see what you guys were hoping to see the rest of the season.
Can I be honest with you, if we're going to talk Halloween for a second? Like, Friday night came, and, you know, we hadn't bought any candy because no one comes to our house ever, And I saw some ad for like the marshmallow Butterfinger or whatever the new thing was. And I was like, oh, we got to get some candy. So I literally DoorDashed to have candy delivered to our house, like $30 worth of like different candy. It was like the stupidest thing.
And, like, you're for the kids. You're for the kids, Brian.
Well, can I ask you a question though, Brian? If you don't have the, you know, you call it candy, we call it sweets.
Sweets.
If you don't have the sweets, what happens? Is there actually a trick delivered in the American household if you do not have the sweets there?
No, not generally. There's some good stories I could tell you, but it would probably take more of the podcast than probably people want to hear. But next time you and I get a chance to hang, Rob, I'll tell you some good trick-or-treat stories of what some people do over here. Anyway, to answer your question, getting all the way back to it, AB, I just want to see more use of the barnyard, as people like to call it. I'm hopeful that one of the adjustments from the bye week was that they realized, oh, this works every time we do it. We should do it more often. And last game, they did it twice. Now, once they did some really random false start. I don't know why they were in such a rush to get that snap off, but AJ Barner got his first rushing touchdown. I hope it's not his last. I don't care if it's a running back or a quarterback. I just want a short yardage play that works. And that one seems to be working pretty darn well.
It seems like the name is sticking too, right? Barnyard. I feel like that's a general consensus of what I'm hearing.
I'm just going to stick with it. I've got a separate nickname I'm starting to push that I at least want to throw out there. Not for this, but for JSN. I referred to him yesterday as the human torch because anyone that gets close to him is getting burned. I don't know if that'll stick, but
it's a little long, but I like it. It's
all right. True. All right. Just debuting it here. We'll see how it holds up.
Hey, let us know in the comments what you think of the human torch, a trademark Brian Emhauser. Mike, what is your trick or treat play for you?
Yeah, I'm with Rob on just a big run would be nice. Like one of those. Remember how exciting it was to see, I think, K-9 against the Saints, I want to say his rookie year, just hit one for like 60 something. That'd be cool. But in the trick play bag, I would love to see Byron Murphy score. I was thinking about that when the barnyard did not work technically on the false start, because you still got to get the cadence right too. And that's just not someone they're used to hearing the cadence from. So that is like a potential drawback of that. But yeah, I'd love to see Murph get in the end zone, just whatever it takes for the trick, the short yardage stuff. I'm with Brian. Just short yardage stuff needs to be cash. Like, I think if in a copycat league, there needs to be way more gleaned and copied from what the Eagles have shown us last couple of years. Like, there's just so much value in having this cheat code on third and fourth and one. So yeah, whether that's AJ, Sam, Murph, whatever, I just like fat guy touchdowns. I love that. I think it's Mike Golick calls him a thick six. I think. Yeah. As soon as I read that on like Twitter, wherever he said it, I was like, that's incredible. So now I'm on board with a thick six.
That's what we're looking for. Something with that connotation and rolls off the tongue. I like it. But usually we jump into our game recap, but today was big around the league because 4 p.m. Eastern time was the trade deadline, and the Hawks, per usual, wanted to steal the show and make sure everybody was talking about them. They're sending 2026 fourth and fifth round picks to the Saints in exchange for wide receiver Rashid Shaheed. JSN tweeting out the double eye emoji when this went down. Shaheed has played in Kubiak's system last season with the Saints, which is important to note. But would just love to know from you, Rob, your thoughts on this move from John Schneider.
Well, I've loved the last couple of days. Just the fact that Jay Glazer sort of made everybody really interested on Sunday about, oh, the Seahawks are really aggressive. And, you know, that got my imagination going for the whole of Sunday and up until the game, because obviously I had a long wait until it kicked off. And then on Monday, Adam Schefter doing his kind of like, oh, I'm going to join the party and I'm going to speculate about the Seahawks a little bit more. And then, you know, all the other reporters were jumping on the bandwagon. And then Albert Breer was saying today that the Seahawks were in on everything. And that just, I got so carried away. Like, I did a stream yesterday and got overly excited about what could happen. I don't regret any of that. I got blocked by Jacina Anderson on Twitter today, which was quite an interesting thing. Yes, I got blocked by Jacina Anderson.
Before or after her laptop broke?
I don't know, because I'm blocked. So basically she tweeted out, I'm told the Giants would like to trade Evan Neal today, in quotes, per league source. And I just replied instead of tomorrow. I mean, Just I'm trying to be funny. She blocked me. She called me dense and then blocked me. So there was the insult first. So that was quite fun. And then just as I was about to go on air for the day job, the great timing from the Seahawks, they traded for Rashid Shaheed. So I barely had time to sort of gather my thoughts on that. But I think it's a good trade for me for a couple of reasons. I'm sure Brian and Mike will go into more of the detail on him and what he can do schematically. But for me, it's another weapon. It's a value kind of deal. I think it's important at these times not to just reach for need like the Colts have done. So have everything to the Jets for Sauce Gardner. You know, I think it's about looking for the opportunities that are there. And that's when the Seahawks have done their best business, I think, in this sort of trade deadline scenario. You know, Quandre Diggs for a fifth, those kind of deals. Carlos Dunlap for a seventh. These are the kind of deals that can end up getting a bit more back than, say, some day three rookies will bring back. There's a chance to extend him in the offseason if it all works out well. He is somebody who's very familiar with the scheme, so he's going to settle in quite quickly and probably provide a dynamic threat. And I know a lot of people are splitting hairs on the compensation and saying, is it a bit much? I am completely down with giving away a fourth and a fifth round pick. I have spent, again, a large part of my free time studying the draft class that's coming up, and it's crap. It's a crap draft. There's hardly any players that you can grade in round one. I would hate to be told by an editor, if I was working for a website, you've got to do a mock draft, because I wouldn't know where to start. Because it's impossible to sort of project who is going to end up being taken in round one where they don't deserve to be taken that early, but it'll just be because they have to. And there's no depth. So I think trading a fourth and a fifth round pick to get somebody who could help you do something this year, I'm perfectly happy with that. So I'm going to give the trade a couple of thumbs up. I think it's a good deal.
Yeah, it seems like this is a move that the Seahawks were really focused on this year. So Mike, when you think about how this could potentially help the Seahawks in their postseason opportunity, what stands out for you?
Yeah, if Kupp is hurt, I love it. You know, if I love the addition of Shaheed. That wording sounded funny. I don't love if Kupp is hurt, but if Kupp is unavailable to them in the immediate future, it makes all the sense in the world, because, you know, He's a good player. That's, you know, I like Cody White, but as him as your wide receiver three, you know, instead of like Torrey or Shaheed, I was like, you're coming up in a run against some good defenses here, and you will see some in the playoffs too. So again, if Kupp's out, like, oh, this is fine. Everyone healthy, I was like, well, there's only one ball, you know, so like they're already the most run. They lead the league in design rush rate already, according to True Media. In terms of like early down neutral pass rate that the homie Ben Baldwin has on rbsdm.com, which I love pointing out means running backs don't matter.com. They're like one of the highest rush rates there as well. One of the lowest pass rates on like first and second down. And then when they do throw the ball, Jackson's getting it damn near half the time. So there's only one ball. So if everyone's healthy, you add Shaheed, Kupp, Jax, Torrey, who I love. I think his skill set is just perfect for this offense. I'm like, okay, where did we just create a log jam? We didn't really need to create a log jam. And we don't know about Kupp's health right now. So again, if Kupp, it's like two-parter for me. Kupp's hammy has to take some time, which good. If he needs some time, take it. You know, I'm the same age as Kupp, hurt my hammy. I get it. You need some time. It's cold outside. If he needs time, great. It's perfect. If he's going to like play against Arizona, I'm like, okay, this is a little weird. You're like actively stunting Torrey's growth, I think, which I see zero reason to do that, especially after what he just showed against the Commanders. The other side of that, and this is where I actually put on my host hat real quick. Boom. My question for Rob here, because I'm very curious about the draft.
Host hat meaning Annabelle never wears a hat, so I got to do the AD? Well, I got a lot of hats. I will wear a hat next show. I feel like this is like the common denominator. I'm always like not twinning with you guys.
Here we go. I just put on this is my host.
And now he's implying that you're bald, I think.
Yeah. Hey, no. Runs this in the family, so it might happen.
It just has the like the silky stuff in it because of my hair.
I bet that is very, very comfortable to wear.
Yeah.
No, it is. Yeah, it's meant so that like my hair doesn't get all frizzy if I wear like a wool hat or whatever.
I don't have to worry about that when I wear a hat.
So with my host hat on, my question is about the draft, because I'm traveling on Saturdays or playing with my kids or just doing anything other than watching like the Big Ten, right? So I don't watch the players when they're playing live. So when the draft is bad, let's ignore the first round for a second, because I think where the meat and potatoes of every draft is right, 2 through 4.5-ish. Are there just no impact players, you think, at any spots? Are we light on certain spots, light on quarterbacks, premium positions? What's bad about this draft?
So I have currently got
my regular hat back on.
In round 2 and 3, 67 players who are graded in that range. So, and that's just my opinion. You know, people can say, well, what do you know? These are the players that I've watched, and that's how I have graded them. Now, that wouldn't be so bad, because there's 60-odd picks going to go in that range. But I only have 5 players graded in round 1, which means that, you know, a lot of those players that are graded in day 2 are going to go in the first round.
There we go. Yeah.
Who are 3 of those 5 players, Rob?
3 of them. Well, Caleb Downs, the safety at Ohio State. Arvell Reese, the linebacker at Ohio State, who was the best player in the draft, in my opinion. And then if you want the other 3, Jeremiah Love, the running back at Notre Dame. Spencer Fanau, the right tackle at Utah. And Vega Ioane, who is Penn State. Now, he would be towards the back end of round 1, but I would be comfortable taking him in round 1. And some other players will emerge. You know, Carnell Tate's having an amazing year. You could convince me that a Francis Margoa or a Brian Parker could go in round 1. You know, I Kedrick Folk has got some physical talents at Auburn, as has Danny Dennis Sutton at Penn State. But this is the draft is not. We're going to see so many players bunched up that I think by the time you get to the top of, I'd probably say around about pick 45, you're going to start seeing teams thinking, we're going to take a 3rd-round player here. And that's not where you want to be. And it's just going to get worse and worse. And I think by the time you get to rounds 4 and 5, which is funnily enough, the 2 picks Seattle has just traded away, I don't think there's going to be much there. I genuinely think there's a chance that the picks that Seattle have just traded away, they might have ended up taking, maybe this is extreme and hyperbolic, I don't know. They might be taking priority free agents in that range. Because that's how thin this draft class is. And by the way, those players that I have said the 60-odd, I can't remember what the number was now because I've got clicked off. Those players that I've got in round 2 and 3, that includes 4 quarterbacks. 3 of them might not declare. Mm. You know, there's other players in that group that may not, I could easily, there's probably about 10 or 15 who are not obviously going to even be part of the next draft. So I was all like today, if you'd have said to me, like the Raiders have said, we've traded Max Crosby to the Seahawks and it's cost them their 1st and 2nd round pick next year. Even as someone who relies on writing a blog, I do it for a laugh, but I won't have anything to write about if they give away all the picks. I wouldn't have cared. I'd have been like, yes, it makes perfect sense. So I don't know how reassuring my opinion on the draft is going to be for anybody, but I'm completely comfortable with trading away a 4th and a 6th. And if they go into this draft, here's my prediction for next year. I don't think the Seahawks are going to have a 1st-round pick in this draft. I think they're going to trade it away. I think whatever they were trying to do over the last 48 hours, I think they were trying to do something big, bigger than this. I think they're going to come back to the table and try and negotiate with teams when the new league year opens. And I think that 1st-round pick in 2026 from the Seahawks could easily be spent on a player who's playing for a different team right now.
Well, Rob, that's strong coming from you, considering that I introduce you as a Seahawks draft blog every show. So I think we should believe your take in some respect there. But Brian, I'd love to just get your thoughts on this trade, on the trade deadline day, and maybe also what the Seahawks didn't do today.
Yeah, I mean, it's important what Rob and Mike are hitting on there. I think there's a bunch of ways to evaluate a trade, and I'll give you a few of them, but I'll start kind of from the back first, which is, what did you give up? And you give up a 4th and a 5th round pick. Yeah, 4th and a 5th round pick, which is day 3. There's been some pretty good 4th and 5th round picks that the Seahawks have had over the years, including Torrey Horton, for that matter, right? But the interesting thing here is, will it will it be only Rashid Shaheed that they get for that? Or will they potentially get a compensatory pick in the 2027 draft? And as bad as the 2026 draft seems to be from a consensus, not just Rob's perspective, but a lot of folks, 2027, a lot of folks think is going to be pretty dang good, including Geno Smith's cousin coming in at probably, if not the number one overall pick, pretty close. So I think that there's a chance that one of the things that the Seahawks didn't do is trade away Tariq Woolen. They didn't trade away Boye Mafe. They have not yet extended Kobe Bryant. They have not yet extended Kenneth Walker. So you have a potential. And by the way, Josh Job is also, I think, due to be an unrestricted free agent this offseason. The Seahawks may lose a lot more players than they choose to sign because they've also got to sign guys. And that could mean you're coming out of this with Rashid Shaheed as a free agent, all those guys, and you could get a third round comp pick, you could get some fourth round comp picks in 2027. So the way this trade, I know it's a little bit complicated, but the way this could actually play out is you get Rashid Shaheed for the rest of this year, and you get maybe a third, probably is too high, but probably a fourth round comp pick in 2027 in exchange for a fourth and a fifth next year. I think that makes a ton of sense. It's a better draft, and you get a player that can help you now. The other thing I'd look at for this is, did you have a need? Not really. Like, if you were at a grade of need on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being like must have, receiver for the Seahawks was probably like a 4. I mean, maybe you could call it a 5. And so this is a luxury addition, but one of the things, there's some places where it's not a luxury addition, which is, first of all, the Seahawks have struggled against two high defenses where they have two safeties deep. They have not played. That's one of the plays of the situations the passing game has not excelled. They're going to have a lot more they can do with Rashid Shaheed and JSN going against those types of defenses than they did before. They also, to Mike's point, there was an injury risk. Let's be honest. Like, Cooper Kupp has not been able to stay healthy the last few years. So far, he has been until this week. It's a hamstring. We just saw what happened with Julian Love over the course of the season. Those can linger. We'll see. Torrey Horton coming off an MCL injury, and I think it was also a hamstring as well last year. And he's been able to play, but he's also got nicked up a few times. And if either of those guys had gone down for an extended period, I think there's some issues there. And so now you have a little bit of cushion in that regard. I do feel, just as an aside, for Cody White, I mean, that guy has been working his tail off, had a great game on Sunday, and he's going to be pushed down the depth chart again. Jake Bobo and Derek Young, who are both injured, they've been working their tails off. They just got pushed down the depth chart again. They were barely getting targets to begin with. So I feel for those guys because they have done nothing wrong. But I just think what this is going to do is something that I think folks are not necessarily expecting. Everyone's going to talk about, oh my gosh, he's going to help with the pass game. He's a great receiver, great speedster. But what have the Seahawks done all season? They've lived in heavy personnel, two tight ends, a fullback, whatever. And that's allowed them to actually go against heavy personnel on the defense, stack boxes, all those kinds of things. That's allowed their passing game to go really well, but it's really held their running game back a little bit. Now, I don't think teams are going to be able to walk a safety up if Shaheed and JSN are there. I think they're going to have to keep their safeties back. I think that's going to open up the run game in ways that they haven't been able to get so far. So I think you're going to get more advantageous looks in the run game. I think you're going to get more advantageous looks in the pass game. And I think you've given teams basically an impossible choice of is anybody really going to feel comfortable putting two players over JSN and leaving Rashid Shaheed single covered all the time? Good luck with that. By the way, Sam Darnold is the number one deep passer in the NFL. Number one. JSN is the number one deep receiver in the NFL, and Rashid Shaheed's not far behind. So, yeah, I think this is a move that is not out of need. But I think it's a move that has a potential to cause absolute chaos for every defense that has to face this team the rest of the way.
Yeah, it'll be exciting to see just Sam Darnold work with Shaheed, right? And see how that connection takes form and just the Seahawks offense becoming more dangerous. But Brian, you did mention just some health concerns. And I do want to mention just some of the notable injuries because we haven't been on this show and talk since Julian Love went on IR. And then obviously you mentioned some other notable injuries, but in Sunday's game, Ernest Jones leaving the game. So I'd love to know just Mike, what's the update? What should we know about Ernest Jones' situation?
Yeah, Mike McDonald will talk to us on Wednesday. But yeah, Ernest left with a knee injury, didn't come back. Josh Jobs in the concussion protocol. That can vary depending on like what I think they test every player's like baseline, and then you got to get back to it or something like that with your brain and your concussion protocol to be able to get back in the game. So it's hard to say. Like some guys miss a week, some guys miss two. I think D'Eskridge missed seven or something like that his rookie year. So it can vary quite widely. So we have no idea right now whether Josh Jobs will be back. He could play Sunday, could not play again. It really is crazy how wide the spectrum is there. And then yeah, Ernest hasn't played or didn't finish. We don't know the status there yet. I think the important thing there with Ernest will be tomorrow to find out, is it the same knee that he had surgery on? Because he was dealing with a knee problem for the last, I think he said the last couple years, and then had it effectively just drained, I think, this offseason in like February. And he's been playing great. He's moving a lot better. Is it the same knee now? Because that would be, he's not in that Cooper Kupp thing where it's like, okay, you're hurt, dang, again. But I mean, when guys re-injure something, that's all, you always like, that gets my antennas up. Same thing with like an Abe Lucas, you know, it's like, oh, dang, it's your knee again or whatever. So we don't know how bad that is, but yeah, those are pretty big. And I think, yeah, the Derek Young and Bobo injuries factor into this Rashid Shaheed situation quite a bit, particularly on special teams. If nothing else, because Derek was their guy there too. And we know that the Seahawks, I think, I don't know where they are in DVOA. Brian could probably tell me, but I know by EPA, the Seahawks are one of the best special teams in the league right now. So you don't want to have that fall off either. It doesn't feel as important as like offense and defensive stuff, but we've seen all year in the league, special teams is winning and losing teams games right now. So yeah, the injuries factor in quite a bit here, not just cut.
Yeah, Rob, with these injuries, which injury most makes you have the most sense of urgency and concerns you the most right now?
Probably Ernest Jones, because, I mean, I would have said Julian Love every single week. But, you know, Tyre Carter suddenly now can elevate to, you know, the height that he can and pluck a football out of the air and then somehow get both feet down and played really well by all accounts against the Commanders. So it looks as if he's really coming along. So, look, the linebackers it wasn't noticeably awful when Ernest Jones left the field, but I think they're the sort of the two, aren't they? Like it's much easier to imagine the Seahawks going on a Super Bowl run or a deep playoff run with those two defenders on the field instead of them on the sideline. Now people keep sort of typing this in on whether it's like a Twitter reply or on the comments on the blog and stuff, saying that he was jumping up and down at one point on the sideline, Ernest Jones, like he came back in sweats and was jumping up and down at one point in celebration or something. I didn't personally see that on the broadcast, but I wonder if anybody else saw that, because if that's the case, you kind of wonder how bad can it be? And I don't know, like I'm just maybe holding out hope that Mike McDonald's going to come and say, Ernest Jones, it's not too bad. We think we can just sort of give him a couple of weeks rest and he'll be back. So I'm kind of like hoping that's going to be the case. But you just never know. And chances are we're all going to be waiting for Mike McDonald to give us an update tomorrow. And he'll just say, I'm not telling you anything. So that's also a possibility as well.
Yeah, well, yeah. You'd want to add it up to that, but you know, adrenaline in game is a thing, and then you wake up a Monday morning and it might feel different. Like you guys are able to do the post game shows at 2 a.m. It's game day, you're feeling it. You don't feel the pain until you wake up the next morning.
Well, yeah, and also AB Julian Love in that Cardinals game played the whole game, played every snap, and now he will go. What was that, September 30th? He can't come back, I believe, until their game on like November 30th or something or around there. Like he's going to go almost 2 months without playing, and forget jumping up and down. He was running and tackling, you know, for a couple hours and wasn't able to play. Yeah, that adrenaline stuff. I learned that early on in this job. I would go up to guys after they got hurt or didn't finish the game. Hey, man, you good? Oh, yeah, Mike, I'll be straight. IR the next day. That's happened so many, or like the next week or whatever. That's happened so many times. It was to the point 1 year I was about to do a story on like, how do you feel on Monday? Like going around the locker room and getting guys, I forget what made me scrap it, but yeah, that's Monday feels so different for those guys than Sunday, especially when you win. It's like, yeah, man, I can do a cartwheel. And then you wake up and you're like, my wife needs to help me to the bathroom because my knee is the size of a bowling ball. That happens to these guys all the time. And I'd say that's what happened with Ernest, but totally on the table, particularly when you have to fly as well. You sitting there, if your knee hurts, you sitting there with it bunched up for 5 hours, which is what that flight is. That thing could feel great. And then by the time you land in Renton, it's the size of a bowling ball. So yeah, hopefully Ernest is okay though.
Mike, wait till you get to 40, Mike, and then you'll need the help to the bathroom even when you haven't played an NFL game.
Well, I was going to say, Rob, I feel brutal coming off those cross-country flights, and I've never played in an NFL game. So definitely can't imagine that. But let's just recap that game because the Seahawks went to the East Coast and had a dominant win over the Commanders, 38-14, setting a new franchise record, 10 consecutive road wins. And for a team that historically has Seattle being a hard place to play at home with the 12s, I feel like we're feeling pretty good about that stat. And Brian, I did see that you tweeted a video of the Cardinals fans leaving in the third quarter, to the end of the third quarter. And even just listening through the broadcast, I could hear the Seahawks chant. So I'd love to know just what that environment was like for you in State Farm Stadium.
Well, you're talking about the Cardinals game way back when, or are you talking about the Commanders game?
Commanders game. Commanders.
I just want to make sure because it also happened in the Cardinals game.
So, hey, we love it. We love the Seahawks fans traveling. Like, let's just
they do.
If we can't win at home, we're going to take our two losses home. We'll just go on the road and do it.
So Mike can back me up on this in the Commanders game. I felt for those fans. They were not handling it super well. There were some guys right outside the press box. There was one guy that I think it was, there was a third down play where the Seahawks had the ball near their own end zone. It was a play, I think, right before the Cody White 60-yarder. And Sam Darnold is kind of moving around the pocket. Looks like he's going to get sacked. And then he finds JSN over the middle for a third down conversion. And the guy just gets out of his seat and starts yelling at the field, like screaming at the field. And then they hit Cody White for the touchdown. He turns around to the press box and starts yelling at people in the press box, get these guys out of here. I think he wanted not the people in the press box, but he wanted the people in the press box to tell ownership to get rid of the players, to get rid of the coaching staff. And then, I don't know, man, it was like probably maybe a quarter later, there was another Commanders fan who pulled his jersey off. He was shirtless trying to go after a Seahawks fan. And it was Mike.
No, this guy, he weighed more than me.
Yes, he did.
A lot. You want to talk about a thick six. Was this guy. Yeah, he's a big boy.
It's a decision. It's a choice when you have that build and you choose to go shirtless in public. But he did. So I give him credit for it. But yeah, it was hard to be a Commanders fan in there. And then, my gosh, I honestly took some of the luster off the win for me, the way that what happened to Jaden Daniels. I mean, injury to insult. You'll never find a better example of that. And to know that Dan Quinn had to go in there and answer questions and is still answering questions about that. It's a bad time right now to be a Commanders fan. So yeah, but from a Seahawks perspective, it was like a practice. It was like throwing against air. I mean, this was as comfortable as I've seen a Seahawks team look on the road since, I don't know, when they went to Toronto and beat the Bills 50-17 in 2012. Like, it was just that simple. And honestly, in some ways, it was simpler. In that game, Sherman had some problems with a receiver that to this day is probably the receiver that gave him the most trouble in his career. So anyway, it was dominating. It was dominating. And the way that Sam Darnold came out there, the way that Clint Kubiak called that game, it won't be one I'll forget for a while. It was really, really impressive.
Well, you know what brought me so much joy was turning on the TV on Monday morning to whether it was ESPN, Good Morning Football, and hearing the host say, who the heck is Cody White? Who the heck is Elijah Warrior? Who the heck is Ty Okada? And I'm over there like, well, let's talk about it, because Seahawks fans know exactly who they are, and a lot of firsts for the Seahawks in this game, and guys stepping up in the ready squad, really living up to their name. It was a first touchdown for Cody White and Elijah Arroyo, first interception for Ty Okada, first forced fumble from Brandon Peely to set up Arroyo's touchdown, and first recovered fumble for Connor O'Toole. So love to know from you, Rob, which first caught your eye the most?
Well, I mean, look, just as a massive Elijah Arroyo fan before the draft, I'd probably have to say that one. I was just really delighted to see him get a touchdown. I'm no complaints. You know, I understand why he's not, you know, featuring as much in the passing game, because look, give all of the balls to Jackson Smith and Jigba as far as I'm concerned. I don't care. And then, you know, AJ Barner is playing well, and you've got another cast of receiver, like Torrey Horton, obviously. So I understand why he's not featuring as much as maybe I think you'd expect a second round pick to feature in his first year. But I enjoyed seeing that. I think it's, if it had gone on and on and on, it did a bit for Noah Fant, didn't it? Like, he didn't score a touchdown for a long time. Like, if it just goes on and on and on, and you think, well, why have you drafted this guy in the second round for, you know, one catch a game, and he's not really doing anything? So I think if he can start chipping in with a few touchdowns now, in the same way that Torrey Horton is, Torrey Horton's yardage is not massive, but he's got an incredible amount of touchdowns already. So if Arroyo can maybe become that weapon when you get close in, I'd say that was the one that put the biggest smile on my face. But, that, you know, all of them did it. I had a smile on my face the whole game. I had a smile on my face 24 hours after the game had finished. I've still got a smile on my face. Yeah. Brilliant.
Mike, for you, who gave you the biggest smile on your face watching those first plays?
Yeah, definitely Cody White. You know, I remember I tweeted out his he posted on Instagram when he made the team, and I remember tweeting it out and was just thinking, like, man, that's so cool, man. Because I know there's like some people that either I went to college with them, or we were in college around the same time, who recently kind of had to make that call. You make it around like your late 20s. I feel like a lot of guys do, like, all right, do I become like a cop, or do I keep trying to like roll around on these practice squads? Pretty much, you know, like, you're that fringe athlete guy in football. Because you get to like Cody White's age and people are like, why should I keep you when I can get, there's a Torrey Horton in every draft, you know, to a lot of evaluators. That was really cool. I am still cool with Esau Winston, for instance. I think he's like late 20s. I don't think he's on a team right now. Cause like, after a while, when you just stop even making the team, you know, it's like, man, what do I do? Do I get a job? Do I go to call Google? You know, like, do I keep carrying out the dream? It's hard to just kind of give up that thing you love at like 29, you know, or 27, you know, where some people are just getting going in their career. So Cody has been in the league since 2020. That was his first touchdown. You know, that's pretty cool. That was pretty cool. I went up to, he was wearing a suit too, a nice suit. I don't know if he posted a picture of it. It was like a cool green suit I had on. I went up to him. He was one of the first people I went up to in the locker room. I was like, hey, man, I'm happy for you, man. That's what's up, knowing how long he's been in the league. Because one thing for a guy like Elijah, who's like, all right, man, I'm just a rookie. You get plenty of chances to play. To Brian's point earlier, Cody may never play again. You know, like, and if he may never get another target all year. No joke. Like, if everyone's healthy, he may never get the ball thrown his way again. And shoot, in that game, he only got it thrown his way again once. I think it was the pick. So, like, it shows you how rare the instances are. So, knowing that he's been in the league that long and he got his shot, I was like, that's cool. That is really cool. I was happy about that. And I told him that after the game.
And he had his touchdown celebration ready to go.
He did. He did. One thing I just wanted to add to what Mike said is, you know, they always are saying like, oh, this is the guy that's the first one in and the last one off the practice field and the last one home. The amount of times I've seen Cody White be literally the last person on the field after practice, catching passes off the jugs machine, like, that is one of the constants from training camp, is that he's always out there. And so, yeah, this is a guy that has just put everything into it. And honestly, he hasn't done anything wrong. Like, when he's gotten chances last year and this year, he's performed. And he even did things on special teams last year. I think he blocked a punt first time. Like, he's done stuff every time he's had a chance. And that's just how hard it can be sometimes to make it in this league. So, yeah, I'm with Mike on being really, really happy for Cody that he had that. And I hope that it does lead to more for him one way or another.
Well, I think that's a general consensus of something that you can take from the Seahawks season so far, is that it's the next man up mentality, right? But like, that's the standard now. The standard is, okay, next guy up, you're out there to make plays, score touchdowns, turnovers. Like, that's pretty amazing. And it just shows you a lot about the culture that they're building, the program that they're building under Mike McDonald. But I do want to talk about a special teams play that I alluded to earlier in the show, the kickoff featuring the 300-pound Brandon Peely. First kickoff appearance in his pro career. I think he said the last time he did that was in middle school. And you know what? It worked out great. So I'd love to know, Brian, just can you elaborate on your thoughts on Jay Harbaugh's unit in this special teams situation that we saw?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, AB, is that Harbaugh was a guy that got a lot of fan hate last year. I mean, there were some pretty low lows for the special teams. The Jets game was maybe one of the worst special teams performances I've ever seen for a Seahawks team. At the same time, that kind of overshadowed what, in a lot of ways, and I watched the team each week and tracked their numbers, they were pretty good in a lot of ways on special teams last year, but no one wanted to hear it because all they could see was how bad things were. And so there's folks that wanted that guy gone with Ryan Grubb and wanted a new coach in. Well, lo and behold, Jay Harbaugh has the number one special teams unit in the NFL. They've contributed to multiple wins. I mean, we're talking about blocked field goals. We're talking about touchdowns on returns. We're talking about touchdowns in multiple ways. And this was just the latest. And the cool thing that I think you're getting at, AB, is this was not like, oh, just put a great athlete in there like everyone else does and have it work. That's, you know, good. Like, it's good to do that. But this was putting a Brandon Peely, a 330-pound plus nose tackle, on special teams. I wish there was a way I could look it up. I would be shocked if there's ever been a 330-pound nose tackle in on kick coverage in the history of the NFL. And
there's going to be a lot more now. That's what we do now.
Maybe. And to his credit, Peely is an excellent athlete for someone that size. And, you know, I think Mike McDonald referenced this, that part of how that happened was Jay Harbaugh was kind of looking at who was going to be active and available, because the special teams coach, what people don't realize, they don't get the pick of the litter. They don't get to just say, these are the guys we want. They're going to be active. They have to kind of choose based off of who's going to be available. That's a factor that they have less control over. And to his credit, he put Brandon Peely in there, and man, like, his big old mitt went in there and knocked the ball out for a fumble. And another guy, undrafted free agent Connor O'Toole, he got in there to recover it. And so those two guys are maybe unlikely heroes, so to speak. And good for them, man. It was nice to see. And I think he got a lot of love for that, as well he should.
That could have been the other title for this show, Unlikely Heroes, because really that's where they were unlikely heroes. But I'd love to just know your thoughts on some of the rookies, because it was Torrey Horton and Nick Emmanuori who came off the field chanting, "Rookie takeover, rookie takeover." And you guys were probably at the presser when Mike McDonald responded to that, saying, "Hey, easy there, Tiger. We have a lot of work to do." Pretty sure they aren't giving up playoff slots after week 9. So maybe just from you, Mike, what rookie has excited you the most so far this season?
Yeah, I mean, well, excited is Torrey, probably the most like impactful, probably Gray. But just that's more of a what position they play type of thing. But Gray's numbers are pretty good. I was checking them, and yeah, his tape looks good. I'm really high on Torrey's game. I was telling people before, like, when it was very clear Cup was going to be out, like, I picked up Torrey in every fantasy league I'm in, and people were asking me how he's going to do. I was like, yeah, start him, play him. I think he's going to kill. Like, I'm just really high on that guy. And then, like, beyond the rookies, what kind of made the Shahid thing kind of confusing is the wrong word, but you'll get where I'm going with this. If everyone's healthy, I thought, and I wrote about this too, I thought just Sunday night was such a great example of, like, what teams really want, like, internally. Like, oh, look, we had these injuries, and then look at these young guys that are inexpensive, who have been grinding, that we rewarded with an opportunity and they made the most of it. It's like, you, when you have all that, usually you don't, like, well, let's bring someone in. Usually it's like, well, we want to reward a Cody White. And I looked up his numbers just now. Cody White's only, he's got 3 catches in his career as active guy on the team the last couple of years for 104 yards and a touch. And yes, he did block a punt in that Rams game last year. So, like, to Brian's point, when he's in, he's doing everything that they say. He returns kicks too. So that's it. Kind of made it a little weird. I thought if everyone's healthy to go out and spend, no matter what the draft capital was, just because every time something like this happens, Mike McDonald always reminds us, like, yeah, this is my favorite story. Whether it's Josh Jobe, Ready Squad guy, Ty Okada, Ready Squad guy, Drake Thomas. I don't remember if he was on the practice squad, but definitely bottom of the roster. So unaffected is the same thing. Like these guys who have like earned their right, kind of bought in, perform when they're called upon. This game was a really good example, the Commanders game, that is. So I think that's important for everyone to see. And it's important for the I feel like it. Having talked to like scouts and stuff like that, and the sound documentary that they do, the in-house one the Seahawks do, kind of highlights this as well. Those scouts, man, that job stinks. Like you're just rolling around in these college towns in the fall, away from your family. Like some of them don't even live in Seattle. They'll live like closer to where their area is, like in SEC country or whatever. So like you do all that work, and then maybe you like really fall in love with a guy, and maybe they draft him, maybe they don't. Maybe they take him in the sixth round, maybe he never plays. So like you really want to incentivize those guys to feel like that work matters. And then if you're the guy who really banged the table for Drake Thomas, you're like, hell yeah, you know, and you know they're going to reward if you find a Drake Thomas, reward if you find a Josh Jobe, reward if you tell him, hey, go claim a Darion Kendrick, you know. So when they've had these stories and they've pretty much all panned out for the most part this season, it made me be like, huh, you need a Shahid, huh? I guess he's a fun player, but like that culture stuff is really huge. And since they've been just banging it into our heads, I was like, guys kind of just deviated from that a little bit when you do have like testimonials, I guess, on your roster right now.
You know, there's two things, sorry to jump in, AB, but the two things that you said, Mike, that jogged a thought. One is I completely hear you on the cultural aspect, just the locker room thing of rewarding people for earning it. The other side, if you just look at it, like set emotion aside, where does Rashid Shaheed rank on this team in terms of best receivers? I think it's either two or three at worst. Like I think he's one of the best receivers, and I think it's pretty clear he is better than the guys we are also fond of, like Cody White. I think he's going to be more dangerous. He's going to offer you more, and that could be the difference between winning a game in the playoffs or not. So I understand that part. The other thing that I would just throw out there that I'm curious if you guys buy this. I feel like if the Ernest Jones injury was more serious, if they were more worried about it, I wonder if they would have been more aggressive trying to go out and get a linebacker. Because after Drake Thomas and Tyrese Knight, you're talking about like Patty O'Connell. Maybe they like Chris Paul Jr., Poo-Paul on the practice squad. Maybe they like Jamie Sheriff, but maybe there's something in that as well, that maybe they are not as worried about the Ernest Jones injury as they might be. So those are two things that just came to mind as you were talking.
Yeah, then do they have a trade partner? Are you bringing in the right guy? Because then I think, and John has mentioned this, and I know that this has been an issue. You bring in a guy, mostly in free agency, he's done this, and it's just the wrong fit. It's like whether he doesn't get along with his position coach, he's not the right scheme fit, that Draymond Jones stands out in that particular example. He just ends up not being what they want in that particular position, like Keller Witherspoon is an example of that as well. These are fine players, they just didn't fit. You got to wonder how much research they were doing on inside linebackers around the league. You know, you get Ernest got hurt at what time would that have been? Like 9 o'clock Eastern, you know, like how many teams can you call around and say, hey, who's got backers? Who's got backers? So I agree, but it could be bad. And it's just like they called and was like, dang, we don't have enough internal research on insert backer here to pull the trigger. Cause you don't want to just bring in the wrong guy. Cause that compounds the problem, unless you call Miami. Because I would have done that and brought Jordan Brooks in a heartbeat if EJ is hurt.
Well, there's no question that the Seahawks definitely got more dangerous, especially on the offense just today. But before we get to the upcoming game, I do want to make sure we have time to tell you about our sponsor for this season. So check out this quick video.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
I love it. I think I got that song memorized in my head. I hope all of you do too, because we are so excited to have Sleeper with us this season. If you're into sports as much as we are, check it out because it offers it all. News alerts, live scores, stats, real-time chat with others, and you can also win real money. So make sure to check out the number one sports app today and try it out for yourself. Use promo code HMA and you'll get up to a $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational in over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. We're so excited to have them with us this season. But let's talk about a team that to some people might be easy to sleep on because they're 3-5. But if anybody watched Monday Night Football, you know to not take this team lightly. Jacoby Brissett has brought new life to this Cardinals team. They went to Dallas, beat the Cowboys on primetime 27-17. And the big question was who is going to be the quarterback for this game. And we found out today that it will be Jacoby Brissett. So just wondering from you guys, do you feel better or worse, Brian, with this quarterback change?
Well, I've got some priors on this. I got to admit, I was harassing some friends who have been Kyler Murray fans. And I've just been out on Kyler Murray for years. And so I think he might have played his last game for this team. Jacoby Brissett is a fine quarterback. He's a fine backup. I think he's a fine, like, occasional starter. But this offense has looked much more reliable with him in the lineup than it does with Kyler Murray. I think it's not an accident that Marvin Harrison Jr. had a career game with Jacoby Brissett against the Cowboys. Of course, pretty much everybody has career games against that Cowboys defense, but I also think Jacoby Brissett is part of that calculus. Trey McBride has had better success with Jacoby Brissett in the lineup. And I think the coaching staff, they said it today, even if Kyler Murray had been healthy, they were going to make a change at quarterback. So it's a pretty titanic shift for a number one overall pick that they've obviously given a lot of money to and invested a lot in. He seems like he will not be part of that franchise going forward. And it'll be interesting to see if he's the next guy that goes to another team and you know, reclaims his career. But I'm not counting on that happening. I think the other big parts of this, AB, there's a lot of changes to that Cardinals lineup from where they were in week four. And a couple of the guys that I just call out are rookies. And Rob probably knows more about some of these guys than I do. But Walter Nolan, their first round pick, played his first game against the Cowboys. Defensive tackle. He is a very disruptive player. When I talked to Jared Wilson, the Patriots' second round pick, I think it was, no, third round pick, asked him who the toughest guy was for him to block when he was in college. Walter Nolan. And this is a guy that is super disruptive, played his first game, got his first sack. That's one name. Will Johnson, who slipped to the second round as a corner, was out the first game against the Seahawks. He is back and he is really, really good. So I think the Cardinals defense is going to be something that is, I think, a little tougher than people remember it being. And I think the Cardinals offense is probably going to be a little bit less high variance where it's like, oh my God, Kyler Murray does something amazing. And then three quarters go by and you're like, what happened? Where did this go? I think Jacoby Brissett's a little bit more predictable. I don't think he's good enough to necessarily go up against the Seahawks defense, but I do think the Cardinals defense is going to be one to watch. And I think they've got some real playmakers on that side of the ball.
We've seen this team against the Seahawks in week four, and it was close. They only lost by three. For you, Rob, when you look at this Cardinals team, what's the most improved part now going up against the Seahawks on this Sunday?
I don't know. I don't know if they're necessarily improved. They just seem to have been in a lot of close games. And I suppose there's two ways of looking at it because, you know, they did beat Dallas. Dallas's defense is atrocious. So I think that has to be noted. But they played the Packers pretty close. And I think off the back of that, you would say, you know, playing the Packers close than beating the Cowboys on Monday Night Football, that's a really good pairing of games there. Yet the Packers then went and lost at home to the 13.5-point underdog, the Panthers. So actually, are the Packers that good? You could kind of argue there. They only lost by 4 points against the Colts. But how good are the Colts? Like, the Colts have been winning, but they didn't look very good at the weekend. This Cardinals team are the only team to lose to the Tennessee Titans. So for three quarters against Seattle, Arizona looked like a team that's going to end up picking in the top five. And then in the fourth quarter, the Seahawks decided they were going to make it really interesting for some reason. So I don't really...
They were just trying to make your life hard. Come on, that, on a Thursday. Yeah,
they are. They're good at that. They've done it for a while. It's hard to get an angle on because they've got, obviously, Marvin Harrison looked better with this quarterback and Trey McBride. I mean, I drafted Trey McBride in every single fantasy team that I've got. None of them are doing very well, so maybe that wasn't a great idea, but he's a quality player. You know, Brian mentioned Walter Nolan. The thing about Walter Nolan is I remember speaking to somebody who's a former GM in the league during the offseason. I said to him, what do you think of the defensive line class? And he said the defensive tackle class was, he was a huge fan of the defensive tackle class in the draft that's gone. He was higher on it than me. And Walter Nolan in particular was one of his favorite players. And he basically referenced that he's got, you know, he's got all the talent in the world, but it's upstairs. Is he trustworthy? Is he reliable? Is he going to be the kind of player that you can depend on? That was certainly the issue at Ole Miss, where he was seen as a bit of a mercenary. I've seen the clips, I think everybody has now from the weekend, where he looked absolutely fantastic, you know, borderline unstoppable. And he had flashes like that against Ole Miss. I'd run straight at him and make him not want to be there anymore in this game. And I think you may find that motor sort of dies a little bit like it did in the SEC last year. I think this is going to be a game that feels close and tight and competitive for a period. And then the Seahawks are going to make the plays required to pull away. And this time, I don't think they're going to be arsing about at the end and making it close.
Well, let's hope. That would be ideal. But let's wrap up the show and the Cardinals discussion with a fun question. And Mike, I'll start with you. If you had to compare this Cardinals team heading into their game against the Seahawks on Sunday to a restaurant in Seattle, because I'm guessing a lot of people watching the show are from the Seattle area or have been to Seattle before. And Rob, put your own twist on this if you want to name a place at home in London. But what restaurant in the Seattle area could be a chain too? Would this Cardinals team be, if you had to relate it, Mike?
What stands out to me about the Cardinals is that they just find a way to lose. And I'm trying to think of like a place where they do.
You don't really hear that. You find a way to lose.
No, that's really, really is. Like they have I'm a big point differential guy. They're 3-5. They're plus a nine. Right. That's better than the Niners, I believe, and at least one other team that's in the playoffs right now. I think the Jags. So like they're not awful, but like Rob mentioned, they do just find ways to lose, which is not good. So I'm trying to think of something that finds a new way to be bad. And I think this is a chain, not Seattle specific, but I really think the one that sticks out is probably like Taco Bell. In Seattle, there's a lot of Taco Bell KFC combos, like in the same building. You see a lot of those, and they're both just bad. Because they always come up with new stuff, like a Mexican pizza. KFC tried to sell us like a sandwich with no bread. It was like two chicken patties with cheese in the middle. I think it was like it's just always this new stuff there where I'm like, I'm not eating chicken nuggets from Taco Bell. Don't sell me that. And they just keep changing the menu and adding stuff, moving the parts around, and just still bad. You know, that I think that would be the Cardinals to me. They change stuff. They change coaches. I guess they haven't changed quarterbacks until now. But yeah, they just find different ways to just be just not good enough for me to eat there. And that will probably be how I haven't eaten Taco Bell since 2017. So yeah. I hope that makes sense, but that's probably what.
Hey, well, here's the thing. If for some reason, and we're not hoping for this, but if the Cardinals do win on Sunday, Mike's got to go to Taco Bell. I guess that's
absolutely
the,
not. I will agree to something else, but not, I will agree to eat some, maybe I'll eat KFC.
We can bargain there. Brian, what's the restaurant for you?
You know, Mike kind of came close. I was gonna go with Taco Time, but I'm not gonna do that now. I'll give you another one, and it's a restaurant that everybody likes to talk about as like, this is the place you go. You bring your visitors here, and it kind of gets a lot of hype in Seattle, and it seems to happen every year. You know. But it doesn't really live up to it. It's not that special. And I don't mean to throw shade at a local restaurant because I've been there enough and I do like the food. But Wild Ginger. Like Wild Ginger is like, it's solid Asian fusion food. But there's nothing about it that really deserves the amount of like, oh, well, let's take you to Wild Ginger when you come to town. And I feel like the Cardinals every year, national analysts talk about the Cardinals like they are going to be the thing. And then they end up being not that special. And this is just the latest season of that happening again. So I think I will stick with that. If you're work for Wild Ginger and you want to, you know, get in my mentions, feel free. I will take it. Maybe you can convince me with a free meal to change my mind. But
hey, you said now, you like the food. It's just not maybe the place where you're bringing your friends out of town right off the airport, right?
It's a little repetitive, and it's, you know, like, yeah, let's get something a little bit more unique.
All right, Rob, you're up.
Well, I am 3 hours away from London, but it is actually an amazing place. If you ever go to London, there's so many places that are amazing to eat in London. It is the one place in the world where, I mean, I hate London, but I love eating in London, if that is okay. The example I want to give you is actually my experience last week in Paris. So I went to a restaurant we were at Euro Disney, and we went into this restaurant.
Never been. How do you like it?
It's a lot of walking, which is fine. I enjoyed that aspect of it, but I don't know. I feel like I'm Disneyed out at this point to an extent. However, we went in this restaurant. Looks very nice. You know, bonjour, monsieur. Oh, yeah, great. This is very French. Let's go and sit down, everything like that. And the food, like, it was just, it promised so much and delivered so little. You know, the French are known for their cuisine, and this was not the kind of cuisine I was expecting. And then the bill came, and it was 200 euros, which is like $200. So I kind of thought, if I was paying this in England, I would expect like an unbelievable meal, like a really great, fantastic meal. And it was anything but. It was like the steak was as if someone had taken the sole off their shoe and had cooked it for a little bit and placed some like undercooked fries next to it. It was, and $200. Like, it was only because I'm British that I didn't stand up and kick off, because we British, we can never complain about anything. We have to just suck it up and sit there and seethe silently. So I didn't say anything, but that was, you know, the idea the Cardinals every year get touted, they're going to be something really great, and they end up being 2-5, is kind of reminiscent of my experience in that restaurant. Well, go to your Disney.
Yeah, come to our Disney, both of them. I'm a big Disney person. I love it. But Brian wants to change his answer to Rainforest Cafe, and that's why I'll cut it tonight, because my parents took me there as a
good
child,
call.
And it freaked me out.
Call.
I was so scared of Rainforest Cafe as like a 5-year-old. So that is all we have for you all tonight on the Seahawks Collective. Seahawks are gearing up to play the Cardinals at home with the 12s back in Seattle. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Annabelle Hasselbeck. Go Hawks.